Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video because that's what he's like. Vilmos still working on the website. He does the Jackie Cation store website. I just had it redone by Promotional Rescue, Melanie VC, but promotionalrescue.com did the new website. Vilmos still does the store website, JackieCationStore.com. All you can go to JackieCation.com and see whatever you'd like. Me doing stand-up, where I'm doing stand-up. Please come out and see live shows. You can see the new special. You can see the new old videos. You can see, you can get merch if you want. There's a Dork Forest t-shirt. There's a new beanie because I have a new joke about bees. And so there'll be a new t-shirt. And for the holidays, you can indeed get yourself t-shirts or hats or anything like that. It is November and December, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest. Normally, I say donate to the Dork Forest as much as you'd like. But in November and December, take that money and donate locally to a food bank in your neighborhood. So feedingamerica.org is a way that you can look up your local food bank. You just put your zip code in. You could also Google the words food bank and the name of your town. And that's what I recommend you do globally, too, if you're in Australia or Europe or Africa or South America, wherever you are, please. Iceland. I have listeners all over the world, you guys. So Patrick Brady, Mike Rickberg. That's who I forgot. Mike Rickberg wrote and sang the intro song. He will sing the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program. And there's lots of episodes. So feel free to scroll back through dorkforest.com. You could check out my Tumblr account. There is a Facebook group called Dork Forest Rangers. But my Tumblr account has essentially the fan favorites of the shows for the last 18 years. And I don't think it's actually the whole 18 years because the first 3 years were poorly recorded. And so if you go to bandcamp.thedorkforest.com, you can see I curated that first 3 years into 17 of my favorite episodes. There's also a storytelling album on my Bandcamp, and there is just some loose episodes that you can buy for a dollar, I think, that were live. Anyway, a lot of information. Let's get into the show. Hey, Rangers, Jackie Cation here in my garage with just it's a hot second. Coming in hot. He actually really good friends with a guy that I have been acquainted. We would be friends, Andre and I.
Dubuchet.
If I hung out with him more, I would know how to pronounce his name, you guys. And but we would be friends if we hung out more. But I know him the best of all you two, Adams. And then Andre have a podcast, and it's called Stark Raving Reviews. Adam Felber, welcome to the program, by the way.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here.
It's, and I say Felber, right? Did I do that? Did I stick
it's
that?
It's Felber.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you blew it. Happy to be here. I mean, I just got off a plane and to the news that I might be doing this podcast with you today. I'm not saying I'm kind of like your cousin's, your friend's cousin at the prom, aren't I? Your date canceled.
Well, you know, I'm a wallflower. Will you dance?
I will dance. But I feel like I was brought in here as backup.
Here's the thing. My scheduling is so crazy right now. I sent out 20 people. I was like, somebody please come and do a Dork Forest with me without any notice. And luckily, your co-host threw you under the bus. And
fantastic.
I was like, it's super fun. Adam Felber, by the way, you. It's probably this last Sunday. Is Wait on Sundays? I feel like it's
Wait,
on Sundays.
It, depending on which NPR affiliate you're listening to or whether you're doing the podcast, Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
Anytime.
Yeah.
But yes, so, I just came back from Chicago recording this Sunday's Wait, Don't Tell Me.
That's it. So, and Adam Felber is has his own podcast with Paula Poundstone, which we've all heard of. and more people should listen to, because she just got a Patreon. It's called Nobody Listens to Paul Poundstone.
Oh,
you did
thanks.
Wait. And then the new one is reviewing all the movies.
All the movies, and we love everything. Andre and I have been doing these characters. Andre is this brilliant comedian. You know him best from Conan O'Brien's show.
Yeah.
And we've been doing these two incredibly enthusiastic geeks for years. But now they have their own podcast where they love everything.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations. And my brother, Russ, will literally, there are two episodes. Oh. Wait, just one episode with my brother Russ, Hallmark movies. Because my brother Russ has a theory that if there's one good scene in a movie, that's a good movie. And I was like, you are ridiculous.
I wrote a book over the pandemic with a B-movie maestro named Charles Band. He did all the Puppet Master movies and stuff like that.
Okay. And
I slowly discovered over the pandemic that is his movie aesthetic too. If he makes a movie that has one scene that you remember, or even one shot that you remember, that's a good movie.
Wow. Okay. All right. See, I used to mock my brother Russ about it, but there's no,
you should.
He also knows. Well, it's like Teflon. The guy, literally his mother-in-law just passed away. And he called me up. He said, I guess one of her last sentences, she was almost 101. He's been married to his wife for 43 years.
Wow,
and one of her last sentences was, I never liked Russ. And I was like, well, he could be such a button pusher that I'm like, well, you'll be happy to know that you occupied that real estate until her last breath then, Russ, aren't you? In her brain box. Yeah.
Rent free.
43 years. You would have thought.
You thought she would have come to some peace with him, but no.
No. Turns out.
And, never liked him.
Never liked him. I know he's a button pusher, but he's one of my favorite brothers, and I have four.
You have four?
I have four brothers. And
Did like some Catholicism break out in your family at some point?
Yeah. Yeah. My mother was Catholic, but not practicing. The only thing she didn't practice was birth control. As my sister likes to say, you know, the condom was invented in the 1700s. And then someone said, well, then you wouldn't have been born, Darla. And then she said, no, I would have been born a Kennedy, like I was supposed to have been, or a Rockefeller.
Oh, that's an interesting cosmology right there.
Yeah. There's no shortage of certainty in my family. But Adam Felber, let's talk about your dorkdoms, which I thought is great because we're coming right in hot off of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with Virginia Jones.
Oh, my God. But before we get to that, can I usurp this? Because there's something I have to mention, having just listened to that. I came home, found out I was going to be on this podcast, took a bike ride because I do that every day, and listened to last week's episode with Virginia Jones. And by the way, I'm an instant fan of your podcast. And early on, before Virginia could get to anything, you started mentioning romance novels.
Oh, right.
And
oh, my
then
gosh.
You said that romance novels were your jam. And then you mentioned that a Regency romance, and you actually knew the years of the Regency period. Once again, that's the period when King George III was mad and his prince, Prinny, soon to be George IV, was ruling. And you named the years and said Regency romances are my jam. And
right.
I almost crashed my bike because I am the son of the late Edith Layton, romance writer.
Oh,
Regency
no.
romance novelist extraordinaire.
Now, is it spelled L-A-Y-T-O-N? Or is it
sure
L-E-I-G-H?
Okay. She proposed L-E-I-G-H-T to Signet New American Library when they bought her first Regency romance. And they said that sounds a little too stern. Let's go with L-A-Y.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
But and then she
much
published
like
25
music.
Novels under that name.
Oh, of course. And I have to tell you that romance novels, much like country music, the names of the people have to sort of make you think about white people from Europe.
Yes.
And Edith Layton makes you think about white people from Europe, as does Ashley McVeigh or McCluskey or whatever the I just bought her album. And because I will buy an occasional country music album is what I'm also.
No shame in that.
There's no shame. And the door.
Three chords in the truth.
So. Well, yeah. And I will, I will definitely look her up because I'm always looking for a new author. Turns out they're real clock eaters. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, they absolutely are clock eaters. And I can tell you, she was witty. She researched like hell constantly. There's tons of stuff in there. They're just good books.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm on board. And I will Regency Romance. Just needed to write that down. Rangers. It's okay. And but not your I have to stop myself from weeding off into what you like to read, because we will get to it, because you like a graphic novel a great deal and a comic strip. Yeah. But this Terry Pratchett Discworld business, somebody else wanted to do it, and there's so many of them. Don't worry, listener. You can also be on to talk about Terry Pratchett's Discworld, because there's a gajillion of the books.
There's a gajillion of the books. And the reason I was thinking of it is because you were just talking about Hitchhiker's Guide. And I guess just a few years after Hitchhiker's Guide hit, Terry Pratchett started writing these fantasy novels. And of course, like you, I grew up reading tons of sci-fi fantasy. And they were very much high fantasy in the style of Douglas Adams. And the first couple of books, I think, suffer from that. Like, they're really funny, but, you know, he's clearly trying.
It took six books. Yeah, it took six books for me to like them. Yeah.
Oh, so you've read them.
I've read probably 12, 11.
Oh, my God, that's great. Yes. Okay. And the first couple, not that good, right? Like,
they build
Light
nice.
Fantastic and stuff. They're okay. They're okay.
Yeah. They're okay. I get what they're doing. And I had read them after Hitchhikers. So Hitchhikers, Terry Pratchett, much like Hitchhikers, there's a window where you have to appreciate sarcasm.
For sure.
But as you get deeper into his catalog, the sort of the satire, the political and social satire is epic.
It's amazing. I can't think of any other writer who like gets better around book six. You know, that's exactly what happens with him. And by the time he really hits his groove, like 10 to 12 books in, he is putting out classics of satire. There's one that I love. Have you read Small Gods?
No. No, okay. I have not.
Small Gods takes place in a sort of a desert kingdom that he doesn't explore that much. He has his little niches where, like, you'll get a lot of books from the capital city about the police force, or you'll get a lot of books about the witches, sort of these sort of like really fun semi-feminist tracts about magic and stuff. They're really fun.
Right.
But then Small Gods is kind of a standalone in some weird Egyptian-esque kingdom. And one of the things I love so much about it, and this is a theme that recurs in his books, is that the desert where all religions come from, this particular desert, is populated by lots of gods that people have forgotten. And in the cosmology of Terry Pratchett, things are only as strong as the aggregate belief force in the world around them. And there's something that feels very true about that.
It is very true. And I wonder, do you know what year that would have been written? Was it written before American Gods?
I don't know if it was, but Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett wrote a great book together soon after that. So,
which took the best of both of their talents, I thought.
100%. I love that. And book. Good Omens.
Good Omens. And actually, the TV show is actually quite faithful to the heart of it.
I started the TV show and didn't get all the way through. Not for not liking it, but like something else superseded it.
Right. Sometimes you slide off and then all of a sudden you're I meant to finish Poker Face. I never finished it. I mean to. It was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also a monster of the week. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So,
Poker Face, if you saw episode 3 with the barbecue, I think it's called The Slow. It's like that's the best one. It doesn't get better than that.
Oh, well, then there we go. Okay.
Yeah, you're
I have
done.
Actually
you're
seen
done.
That episode. Yeah. Okay. Good to hear. So, but Terry Pratchett, Small Gods, that sounds amazing.
I love it. And so at some point, I can't remember, I've only read that one once. And at some point, some monk who has become disillusioned is wandering the desert, And he's hearing the little whispers of all these gods that could really use someone to believe in them. And some of them fantasizing about some kind of return to power. And spoiler alert, they're not great if they do return to power.
Are they angry? Are they angry gods when they return to power?
Well,
or were they
forgotten
on purpose?
Well, you don't know what they were until you start believing in them. And then, apparently human belief shapes the way they behave, too. It's a fascinating book. When I read American Gods, I was like, this feels a lot like Small Gods. I do not know which was written first.
Here's what I also enjoy about Terry Pratchett. About 220. That's how long the books are. They're not one of them. Yeah. It's old school science fiction fantasy length. You know, I mean, Dragon Riders of Pern, that first book was too long. And then, but
Dragon
I've read
Flight.
It so many times.
Yes.
Dragonflight. Yes.
I've read that series probably like six times.
Yes. And it was really big for its time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Terry Pratchett ones, they come in right around 260 max.
Yeah. They are sweet spot books.
Yep. That's so cool. And Small Gods. I like that. Did he coin the phrase that all religion comes from deserts? Because that is a great line.
I don't know. He's so quotable. If you spend some time, and I have to for the podcast I do with Paula Poundstone, I spend a lot of time on Brainy Quote.
It's
amazing how often a Terry Pratchett line comes up. And the reason being is that although a lot of your listeners are probably like, Terry who? In England.
No. Not my listeners.
Not your listeners.
Okay.
But in England, he's so huge that, you know, you could buy an almost unlimited number of cool Terry Pratchett Discworld swag products.
Oh, wow.
You can get atlases and wall maps and board games and all kinds of shit.
Let's talk about the world that Terry Pratchett, Discworld itself, because that is interesting to me that what he believes... What is created as the planet itself, or is it the universe that's on the back?
No,
what?
It's the Earth, the Discworld.
Okay.
It's vaguely based on some sort of Hindu cosmology or something. Anyway, the world is a disc that is carried on the backs of four gigantic elephants, which rides upon the back of one giant cosmos-spanning turtle named the Great Atun. Atun or something. So it's elephants upon a turtle.
And the turtle is going just going around the universe?
Sails around the cosmos, yes.
Okay, sails around the cosmos. And then the elephants kind of rotate?
I think the elephants must rotate, or the disc of the disc world rotates on the elephants. And then I know that, and it's too far buried in my past to remember where this comes from, but apparently the universe itself is on the back of a turtle, because I do remember the quote from one of the witches, Granny Weatherwax, saying it's turtles all the way down.
Well, that really does sum it up, doesn't it? The witch ones, I haven't read any of the witch ones, I don't think.
Or if I have,
they were just... Oh, they are?
Yes,
so,
the first one is probably Witches Abroad. Witches Abroad is a kind of fun parody of Hamlet as well. Or is it Hamlet or Macbeth? It's one or the other. As well as being an introduction to these witches. And these three witches are... fantastic characters. The two old ones are just these no bullshit hags who run the world. And you just, they're my favorite characters Terry Pratchett ever created. Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg. Nanny Ogg being a little more earthy, Granny being a little more smart. And they're just the best, and they can beat anyone. And then their young apprentice wish, Margaret, who doesn't really, she really likes a lot of the hats and potions and stuff that the older witches consider bullshit.
Right. She's in it for the latte. Okay.
Yes. So, exactly. What you learn from the older witches eventually is that their version of magic uses little real magic and a lot of psychology, which Granny refers to as headology. So it's a lot of like, if I make you think this becomes magic. It's great stuff. It's really great.
Oh, that is amazing. I have to say, cause there's part of me, and this is, I'm dead serious, except for I am working on a bit about it, but I don't, because everything in my life is, this is, I believe this, because my, folks, I think we understand that if you see stand-up comedy from me, I'm not making anything up. I'm just trying to write a punchline about something that happened. So
happened joke.
Happened punchline, hopefully. Yeah. And what is currently happening, I'm doing a bit about America right now, and at the end of it, I don't have a punchline. So I'm just like, oof. Eventually eventually there'll be a punchline, but currently it is just a pep talk. Anyway, so which funny. Is a laugh line.
No, that's absolutely a laugh line, yeah.
That'll do at the time. But yeah. It is about how I have taken up prayer in the last 10 years because of desperation. And, but I've not ever had a problem with God. Some people don't believe in God, but I believe that Middle Earth is real somewhere. So
nice.
It's not hard for me to believe.
If a multiverse is a thing, there's an infinite number of universes. You're going to find a place with hobbits.
Right. And I would rather believe in everything, quite honestly, than believe in nothing. I would genuinely just, there's things I can control and most things I cannot control. And so I'm fine with it. And there is part of me that believes that Terry Pratchett's Discworld is real somewhere. Just because
I would love to think so.
All of the things. It has all of life. And it's not that different. You know, like if you were to go and, no.
Well, that's another fun thing about Terry Pratchett, isn't it? As life went on, as the 80s became the 90s, became the O's, these high fantasy characters in Discworld would invent things that were very similar to things that were being invented in our world. Like they invented this system of transmitting information, which was essentially semaphore, but it was very much like, functioned very much like the internet. It was called the Clacks, and there's an entire book about it.
Right. So how many books do you think you've read all of his works?
I think I've read all of his books. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So did he write anything besides Discworld and Good Omens? I don't know.
He
because you know how like Douglas Adams wrote some nonfiction.
I know that happened, but I haven't read it. Of Terry Pratchett, he had an early series about these little gnomes or something that lived in our world called Diggers or something. There was like two or three books. I read them. I don't remember them making a great impression on me.
Okay.
There's a sub series in Discworld that's kind of for young adults. About a character named Tiffany Aching, I think is her name.
And I've seen those.
Those are fun. Yep. And I feel like he wrote one other book towards the end of his life. He got early Alzheimer's and tragically passed away just a couple of years ago.
Right.
But towards the end of his life, he wrote one other novel that I read that took place on some sort of tropical island that I really dug.
Do you like sword and sorcery fantasy as a genre, kind of?
I did as a kid. Right. I wouldn't say I don't like it anymore, but I don't read it anymore.
Right. Well, it's right because it's sort of it's a real good coming of age kind of series of books to read where because it's usually just young hero learns that they're not a hunk of junk and that they can do stuff.
That's exactly it. Yeah. It's very what's the word I'm looking for? It helps for that age.
Right. It's unsophisticated. It is not
exactly.
It lends itself to it leads to sophistication, I think, because it introduces ideas that are not that. I think younger minds or newer souls need to hear whatever.
That's
right?
A really good analysis of it. I am not as deep a thinker as you, and so had not really thought about why things like the Sword of Shannara never would crop up in my head after I was 12 years old. But that's absolutely it.
I have 15 nieces and nephews. So, and I would read whatever they were reading because I didn't want to talk about, Digimon, which is the poor man's Pokemon. If you don't have cable, you're watching Digimon in the early 90s. And and I didn't want to. So I read like the Dragonlance series and I read a lot of the early Star Wars books and I read the Redwall series. I couldn't do Clan of the Cave Bear. I don't care. Yeah. But there's some things I just had to stop. But
that sounds like before YA fiction really found its groove, there was this terrible shit that you had to read.
Right. And
there were no Hunger Games back then.
Right. And you try to like you know, get people to, and when I say people, I mean the youth, that I'm related to, the youths that I'm related to, I want them to get in on it. And so that we can talk about the books that I still enjoy. But okay. So yeah. So there's,
so yeah,
there's
no, I'm not a high fantasy reader anymore, but it was so much part of my past that that's why I was absolutely willing to accept Terry Pratchett into my life.
And the comic strips stuff that as your second dorkdom, as we go into the second.
Oh, yeah.
Is kind of a fantasy world as well, because it's talking animals, right, Pogo?
Yeah. Now, this goes way back for me. I was nothing years old. I was probably 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
And I found among my mom's collection of books two fraying volumes of Pogo by Walt Kelly. And, right. You know, it had talking animals. I was also kind of a precocious reader, too. So, like, cartoon strip books weren't really what I was going to be reading at 8. Because I was already, right. I was all about Narnia and Middle Earth back then.
Right. That's when my husband started reading Pogo.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So she had I Go Pogo. And I was becoming somewhat interested in politics at that point. And also I loved wordplay. And Walt Kelly's Pogo had all that. He wrote songs. He was a fantastic artist. And in 1952, just as his comic strip was starting to get popular, he suddenly turned his comic strip political. And Pogo ran for president in 1952. Somewhere around there, also the McCarthy hearings started up.
Right.
And
right.
Walt Kelly created a character, an evil bobcat invaded the swamp named Simple J. Malarkey, which sounded, you know, convincingly like Joseph A. McCarthy, who started like weeding, you know, subversives out of our beloved characters in the swamp and turning them against each other. And
right.
Suddenly in like daily newspapers all across America, like this guy who was drawing lovable cartoon animals was suddenly using them as a platform for his political views. And it's
right.
And I was reading this when I was like 8 years old. This is now like, at that point, it was already like a 30-year-old collection of
it was collected
comic
strips. And yeah.
Oh, it was collected, and he was a devoted enough artist that he would edit the books, take out panels that he thought didn't fit. He would draw extra art, so like you weren't reading them, like they were just daily strips laid out. You read them in book format with chapter titles.
Okay.
He was so ahead of his time with that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know, I know that he was political and that Andy talks about Simply A. What is it? Simply A. What's the last name?
Simple J. Malarkey.
J. Malarkey. That's it. Simple yeah. J. Malarkey. And it's interesting because it led him not to, like, he's read all of Pogo.
Yeah,
but
me too.
He did not. It led him to Cerebus.
Interesting,
and he loved Cerebus.
Yeah.
Until the very end, when Cerebus, the guy who wrote Cerebus, lost his tiny lizard mind. And
I never got deep into Cerebus, so I don't know how this guy lost his mind. But I did recognize sort of a certain commonality with Pogo.
Right. In the beginning, there was that sort of, you know, kind of Marx Brothers. Cerebus, I guess, started out with like a Marx Brothers vibe. And it was more
delightful.
Yeah, it was super delightful. And then somebody hurt him.
So he ended
up being super misogynistic. And Andy was like, I got to step away from Cerebus. But he had read something like, you know, 1,000 pages of Cerebus by this time. And so Cerebus is still part of his zeitgeist. And so he still references it sometimes. And then it's sort of like referencing like a, not anything,
like a dead
but
relative.
Sort of. I was thinking more of a Bill Cosby joke where you're just like, this was well done,
yeah.
But it got ugly. If you go too deep, don't go too deep. And
don't go too deep.
So,
but there's another.
Right, so what is your, yeah.
There's another connection that I think people will find because I'm sure a lot of your listeners love the Bone series of graphic novels by Jeff Miller, is it?
Yes.
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 Now, the two main creatures from Boneville, from Phone Bone and the other bone, the one, the taller one, They okay. are absolutely based on Pogo and his friend Albert the Alligator. They okay. look like them. They act like them. They sound like them. It's obviously a tribute.
Okay. So
and Jeff
okay,
Miller's art style is very similar too. So.
Oh, to Walt Kelly's. Okay.
To Walt Kelly's so, scenery. Yeah.
But it was decades later?
Many. Bone is like Bone? Late 90s, right?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I think so Bone is late 90s. So all I know 90s. Is
that Andy has Pogo, and then he also has Bone.
Yeah.
So it turns out you guys are comic book brothers. So congratulations.
That's amazing. And I don't think of myself yeah. as a comic book person at all.
Right. Well, and he is almost entirely made of comic books. So he is.
You know, I wrote
I'm married.
One. Tell me to read the one I wrote. Yeah, I wrote a 6-book miniseries for Marvel about 10 years ago.
What did you get to write? What'd you write?
I wrote. I had a friend who was an editor there, and he called and asked if I wanted to write a Spider-Man or something. And I was like, no, yeah, sure. And then he called back, and he was like, no, I have this really stupid idea. There's a Grant Morrison series from the 90s. Would you like to rewrite it? And I said, yes. And I wrote a 6-volume series called Skrull Kill Crew.
I've
part of the
Skull
secret
Kill
invasion
Crew.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that with the cows?
Yeah, that was mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're done. No, I'm such a huge,
Well, the one with Grant Morrison was also with the cows. And then okay. I wrote a rewrite of that
Grant
in 2009.
Morrison. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah.
And I started reading comic books in 2003 when I met Andy Ashcraft, who was essentially like, the first one's free. Just try this.
Yeah.
And
that's,
then,
that's,
and
that's
now,
a bad mojo.
That's and then all of a sudden you're in. You're on yeah. board. And so, but we, there's a fair number of comic books that are happening. I tried actually to submit an idea to write a Great Lakes Avengers to Will, forgetting his last name, editor over at Marvel. And I was recommended by perfectly nice people, and he was very polite to me, but he would not read my pitch.
No.
He was like, I know, a disappointment. But Great Lakes Avengers, I'm from the Milwaukee area. And who doesn't want to write a Flat Stanley story with a mortal man working corporates? I do. God knows I do.
I want you to write it.
Yeah, right. Who doesn't?
If my friend Steve were still at Marvel, which he's not, he would have okayed that.
Right, right. You yeah, exactly. That might have been a thing. So, but let's back up quickly to talk about Pogo. And
okay.
what is so who are the characters in Pogo? Who are sort of the main what is Pogo? Who what
Pogo
like,
is
I don't actually know.
Okay,
enough.
The whole thing takes place in the Okefenokee Swamp of Georgia. I haven't talked about Pogo out loud in probably a decade. It takes place in the Okefenokee Swamp of Georgia. Pogo is a possum. He wears a striped shirt. He's an opossum. He's your everyman. He's your Charlie Brown, except he's not a loser. He's your Alex Rieger, although he's not as much of a loser. He's your everyman. He's the one that everybody likes. His best friend is an alligator named Albert, who is bullheaded and stupid but lovable and constantly smokes a cigar. They have a turtle friend named Churchy LaFemme, whose best buddy is Howland Owl. And those two kind of are schemers a little bit more, but lovable schemers. They're constantly starting businesses in the swamp.
They're businessmen. They're entrepreneurs.
But they're not evil. I mean, the evil, but there's a, and then there's a deacon who is often evil and speaks in, and this is a really fun thing about Pogo. The deacon speaks in this beautiful, old timey biblical font. Like it's,
he did a calligraphy.
He did beautiful calligraphic. And over the years, many characters appeared that have their own calligraphy, like a shyster named P.T. Bridgeport, based on P.T. Barnum, a bear, would come through town and he spoke in carnival-like pinup
ads.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
With
amazing.
Fingers pointing at letters and stuff. Like, it was all a big come on.
Old-timey, early 1900s kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So Pogo and his alligator friend wander the
swamps and storylines would take literally weeks, sometimes over the course of an entire year, weaving in and out in the swamps. I mean, you'd read a daily comic strip and there'd be so much happening in every panel and every just like your life, every strip, no matter how serious, ends in a joke. There's a laugh in panel 4 every day.
every day.
Every day. But the storylines wove on and on. Paul Pogo would run for president. They'd hold head to a convention. They'd go to the wrong place. Or the deacon would get kind of seduced by these two cowbirds who were essentially Bolsheviks. And there's just like so much shit would go on.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And he wrote that from before 1952 through...
From about 1948, I would say, all the way through. By the time he died in the early 70s, 72 or 73, he had a lot of help doing the strip, and it didn't look the same or feel the same. I think his heyday was definitely the 50s to early 60s.
Okay. Yeah. So
those are the ones to read. Like start with the early to mid 50s.
Right. Start with that early with that sort of McCarthy hearing kind of ones. That sounds amazing.
And Simple J. Malarkey kept coming back even after Joseph McCarthy was done, because red baiting remained a thing for many, many years.
Right. So this had to lead you into, now it looks like that it led you into all of the other sort of newspaper comic strips.
I got into them for a while. I would take breaks from my like endless sci-fi reading to make sure I kept up on my, political comics. I mean, that's why I went into political comedy in the first place, because of Pogo and Doonesbury and eventually Bloom County. And the next thing you knew, I was like doing stuff like Wait, Don't Tell Me and stuff. I mean, it was a straight line.
It's so funny because I've actually never wanted to do a political comedy. And then 2016 happened. And then it turns out I'm alive. So there's nothing, my stuff has always been vaguely sociopolitical, but never specifically sociopolitical. And I don't do a lot of
interesting, because 2016 is kind of like the moment when I started backing away from political comedy.
Well, because it's probably became overwhelming.
It was nightmarish. I was writing for Bill Maher at the time. And for one, my views and Bill's were starting to diverge by then. But for two, by the end of 2017, I couldn't deal with waking up every morning to see what, the monster to the east was tweeting.
And mine was exactly the opposite. I had not he actually taught me how to hate again, which is a disappointment, because I don't want to hate anything. I don't want to hate anybody in particular. Someone said this to me the other day. Hate doesn't know who you hate. So hate just kind of bleeds over all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So you got to try not to hate anything, because hate doesn't know that you're just hating the one knob job. Hate thinks it can
leak into everything. Yeah, it
just bleeds all over your life.
It fills your head. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I was so angry and I was so full of rage that I had to actually go through the process of sort of leeching a lot of that anger off. And
how
then
did
I kind of came back. Well, by doing some material, by essentially turning it where I'm at with it now, is that a lot of my stand up is kind of a pep talk. It's sort of a don't give up hope. Help the person in front of you. You can't fix Indonesia. But if you the ripple effect of you being a jackass at Starbucks and that person, it will eventually reach Indonesia. So try not. So
I feel like Indonesia just looked up and was like, what did we do?
Wait, what happened? Right. It's better than me. If you'd like to hear my opinion on Israel, it's they make really good salads. Anyway, so it's easier to talk about Indonesia.
Gotcha.
So I'm not going to, let's.
Fair.
There's genocide on every continent right now.
Yep, that's right.
So
we all got it.
Everybody's. The United States isn't doing such a great job. So, I have to very much act, not even just locally, but literally the person in front of me.
That's kind of beautiful, because that is the only thing that you can do in this moment involves the person in front of you.
Right. And if I can help, I will help. And if I can stand up for someone who's being offended in front of me, I can also do that because this middle-aged white lady, you don't know what kind of power this is. This is a live-action meat shield, Adam. You can just hide behind me. The cops are loath to punch it for some reason.
Are you ready to cry if it's going to help somebody else?
I'm always...
Are you ready to shed some white lady tears?
Much like the Hulk, I'm always ready to cry.
Not only is that one of my favorite lines, I believe that is André Dubuchet's favorite line in cinema history. That's my secret cap. I'm always angry.
right. Which is why the current iteration of the MCU Hulk is hard for me. So just because he's turned into Smart Hulk. And
what's the point of Smart Hulk?
We don't want that. That's not what we're looking for.
Is that really the current iteration? I've kind of fallen out of the MCU recently.
Yeah.
Their current they're back to Smart Hulk.
Yeah, they're back to the Smart Hulk. And Andy, you might want to poke your head in because we're talking about...
Hey, Andy.
Yeah, we're talking about Pogo.
Talked Pogo.
Oh, I love Pogo and Bone.
Yes, you do.
And Bone. Anyway. And wouldn't you say that Phone Bone and that other Bone are based on Pogo and Albert? I mean, self-consciously,
sure.
Obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They're almost exactly the same shape as Pogo was. They're absolutely clear. Like all of those characters and Albert, the alligator, and all of them.
And what you should know is that Adam Felber wrote essentially an updated Grant Morrison Skrull Kill Crew.
Oh.
That's that, Adam Felber.
Oh, we read that. We enjoyed that.
Oh, you did. Thank you.
Yes.
You know, I haven't read it in a while, but it was a weird process because I felt like by the third book, I understood how I might write a comic book.
Right. He understood how to write comic books by the third.
By the third one.
Yeah, the third one.
Yeah, no, it was great.
It was great.
Well, thank you. Right after the sort of Avengers Forever.
Yes. Hi, I'm married to a long box. So he's got to go off and teach people how to fight the good fight. Okay.
Nice to meet you, Andy.
There you go. We may not have to do a bonus. Because that's a real clock gator too. But I will say that... He teaches game design in addition to being a game designer.
What games has he designed? I'm sure I've played his games.
It is the first question. The famous games he worked on: God of War 2 and 3. There you go.
Oh, wow. Those are great games.
Yes, and he's currently working on essentially it's a sort of a Sims Oregon Trail dementia game that helps people who are caregivers for people with dementia, and
wow.
So it's an educational game.
I would think. And infinitely replayable.
Right. There's at least, I believe there's about 30 levels.
Yeah.
You guys, and here's where we'll take a break. No. We're at 40 minutes. We're doing great.
You feel strongly about this 1 hour thing. Is that like a service you do for your listeners? Like, I do an hour, I don't do more,
so.
I don't do less. Okay.
Kind of. Because I feel like an hour, and it also inspires people to Jackie Cation me. You guys, you didn't talk about, and you're like, it's true. There can be another hour. There's a guy named Gary. Gary's last name? Gary Anderson? Gary Larson? He's a son, and he's great. There are four episodes of, he is doing the Revolutionary War with me, but he would like to only a year of each revolution. So he has to do 11 episodes. I believe he's done three or four. Long war.
Long war.
Do you remember defending your life? How long have I been dead? You've been dead a long time. Long coma. So that's an Albert Brooks.
That's a great movie.
That is a great movie. So, and who knows? Adam Felber may review that movie in stark raving reviews.
I would love to. We just start delving into reviewing classics. We just reviewed It's a Wonderful Life for our upcoming Christmas episode. Although
there you go,
because the characters that we play are such nerds, we review it sort of almost like it was meant to be the prequel to a franchise about the war between heaven and hell. Clarence needs to. It's all about Clarence earning his wings so he's capable of battling Bahamut.
This is boot camp.
Yeah,
oh my god,
exactly.
That's so freaking funny. I will say the movie that you had something to do with. You said you did not write it. Barbenheimer.
Barbenheimer. Yeah, it's the same person that I wrote a book with, Charlie Band, the guy who's the puppet master man. He's made 350 movies. He has not made them carefully because he's made 350 movies. But if you were alive in the 90s, you were aware of Puppet Master and Trancers and Ghoulies, frightened a lot of kids in the 80s with that monster coming out of the toilet. So I wrote a book with him over the pandemic. I co-wrote his memoir. And when the Barbenheimer craze hit this summer, I texted him. I was like, man, if you're not making Barbenheimer, the movie about some dolls that invent an atomic bomb.
You have left money on the table, my friend.
Exactly.
So he had to do it. That's it.
He had to do it. He had to. And I can't say I wrote it.
Right. Okay. Then
he never uses guild writers, and I'm a guild writer. So.
Oh, right, right. So you can't say it. Can't say it.
It was written by a woman named...
Super fun.
It was written by a woman named Danella Rose.
Okay. All right. It's a beautiful name.
Fun. Yeah.
And it's super fun. Did you see the Barbie movie? Did you see the Oppenheimer movie?
Yeah,
that would have helped to not write it. And but I will say this, is that I didn't see the Oppenheimer movie because it looked sad. And that's... where we get back to romance novels. No. And that is why I read the news, and I think it's been, Rangers will know this. I like the news, Pony Express, 2 weeks late with a lot of analysis. That's what I like. That's
a good
way
to approach it. That way you don't have to try to contextualize it yourself.
Nope. What I like to know is what happened a couple of weeks ago and who I can send $100 to, because there's been some fallout.
So you might miss out if there's an asteroid about to hit the Earth. Then, you know, you won't be as prepped as other people.
I have also stated this, and I will say it again. If my last words are, oh, shit. That is actually a win, because I've trusted somebody, or it'll be fine. It'll all work out. But so we could talk more. Like, I don't even know what Little Abner is. I've heard of Little Abner.
Oh, you know,
but I don't know what it is.
It was contemporaneous with Pogo and not nearly as good, but in some ways much more successful. Not worth talking about.
And what is your opinion of Calvin and Hobbes, which was a phenom in the 80s when I went to college?
Yes. And when I went to college, it was a phenom as well. And I was super into it. And at the time, I would have called it genius. My ardor for it has cooled over the years, but I still think it's a wonderful comic strip. And he was a huge fan of Pogo.
Okay. And Watterson. And it's always been interesting to me that he never made any merch, but he never stopped anybody from making merch. He was do whatever you want.
Yeah, he had no interest in it. And then he's one of those few people who, like, realizes his tank is empty and walks away. And I admire that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That was, like, the most successful comic strip in the world at a time when comic strips could be successful, which I don't – are there any anymore? I don't think so.
I was going to ask you, do you read any web comics? Andy reads a lot of webcam comics.
I read the ones that, you know, come my way, that show up in memes, and I'm like, what is this thing? And maybe I'll read it for a while. But, you know, I was never so into comics that I felt a need to follow webcomics.
Okay. Well, there is a Sword and Sorcery filthy comic that is called Ogloff, OGLAF.com. And it is essentially just beautifully drawn dick jokes. They are hilarious.
I need to be there.
Not always dirty, always funny, and occasionally super filthy. But
I feel like I might have come across that once. Ogloff. And never mean, did you say?
Not mean. Just literally, like, I remember for example, one of them that wasn't dirty was these monks, or they might have been orcs, that whatever it was. They were some sort of fantasy character, finds the Well of Doubt. They've been looking for it. They find it. And the last panel is this it? I don't think so. And so sometimes it's silly.
Yeah,
it's just well written. It's just, and it's written by a couple, a heterosexual man-woman couple, to my knowledge, from Australia. And
well, already I'm on board.
It's once a week, once a week. And but it's sword and sorcery. It's dumb as hell, and it's hilarious and ridiculous. And
I'm so on board with that. I will look it up because, you know, my first thought the minute I hear sword and sorcery comics is, this is written by a dude, and I'm just going to not like the way that that sword and sorcery women are portrayed in this thing.
Right, right. And they are, the women are portrayed amazingly. The men are portrayed various ways.
Okay.
But the women, there's, yes, it is, you know how people are just, whatever, but a stack of meat with just different sausage casings, but
sure.
because of the way the women are often more powerful than the men, but the gods in it are almost always petty, but sometimes apathetic and always interesting. I mean, because of your love of Terry Pratchett, I think you would like Ogloff.
I'm so there. Deal. I'm all over Ogloff. Yeah. Probably right after this.
And then there's this other one that and I can't remember the guy who, it's a British guy who writes it, and it's an iteration. It's just a tiny village in England that has magic, but it also just has a college. So it's weird. It's called Steeple.
I feel like I might have come across Steeple in my travels.
Yes. And so it's there's no reason not to get involved with, but there's a lot of content out there is what I'm saying. And right. The internet has made it possible for there to be something for everyone.
That's really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I guess what I was talking about was the comic strip, the daily thing. And it has mutated into something clearly that is not exactly that, but it is that.
Right. And the power structure and the gatekeepers of those old newspapers, you know, in some ways, you know, there's all the way the world changes is always, we're screwed. It's always going to change. And yeah. We're always going to regret. We're like, there's never going to be any more newspapers. So we're going to get one opinion, or we'll get 3 billion opinions. And then you're going to have to take a lice comb to those opinions.
Right.
So that you can figure out what's true.
Those opinions are going to leave nasty stuff all over your head.
Exactly. Here's now we have like 12 minutes left, and I did want to talk about, I know it.
I'm going to make a chicken franchise tonight, too. So as soon as we're off this.
Ooh. All right. How do you do cooking. That?
Oh, you know what? Yeah. It's
Let's do that.
I like to experiment. No, I don't want to talk about that, but I'm just saying I'm going to make one right after this. No, if you want to make a good chicken franchise, the best one is the New York Times recipe. You follow that, you will have a delicious lemony chicken thing.
Is this bone-in, skin-on chicken?
This is bone-off. Skin-off chicken.
Boneless, skinless chicken
breast? But you create a skin made of egg and deliciousness.
Right, right. You have to, because you currently have a skinless, boneless chicken breast.
Yes!
If you kept the skin and the bones on, you might not have to create quite as elaborate a sauce, but
it's
if the sauce is delicious.
It's a dish I kind of love, because it's called chicken francese, because it's an Italian dish. It's an Italian ideation of what French chicken might be.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I love that. They're like, if I were Indian, this is the curry I would make as an Irish-Armenian woman.
Except imagine if India was just down the block, because Italy and France are not separated from each other by much.
Right, right. True. It's true. They're right there. They're right there.
Right there.
And to quote my brother Phil, the great thing about going to Greece every day, Greek food. Anyway, he is a simple man of the people, Phil Cation. 3 episodes with him, by the way, Rangers, get out there. So I guess, did you go to UCLA?
I did not.
Adam, a favor, because the...
I went to Tufts University in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, there you go. Boston, Massachusetts, Tufts.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard so much about it. I've only been to the Harvard Glass Museum. So I missed out. Not all. There's easily, Massachusetts alone, I think, has something like 800 universities.
Yeah. And only one glass museum. So in some ways, you win.
Oh, well, good for me. It's the flowers exhibit, you guys. Get out there. And it isn't pretty flowers. It's science flowers done by German glassblowers from the late 1800s. And then they had to ship them here on a boat. So it's worth
I'm
the effort.
I'm not comfortable if I'm putting all my glassware on a boat, but, you know, whatever.
And every single case says, don't lean on it. And I leaned on several cases. And Andy had to say several times, hey, it says don't lean on it.
So,
I love to lean.
I'm a leaner, too. People are always surprised to find out how tall I am because, you know, I do nothing but slouch and lean.
Oh, interesting. Now,
I'm 9 feet tall.
You're 9 feet tall. I kind of want to bring you back for the puzzle community just because.
Oh, is that where we were going? Yes, of course.
That's
with
where
UCLA.
Yeah, we were going to be with UCLA.
Are you familiar with the whole puzzle community thing?
No. I once accidentally interviewed somebody here on the Dork Forest who did crossword word. He made he made several of the word puzzles in the New York Times.
Oh, crossword I know a few of those guys. Yeah, those are crossword puzzles.
Yes. But I don't want any part of those. But
this isn't that. Although I do like crossword puzzles. The puzzle community is a bigger thing. I don't even think we can get into it now. But like, all right. So there's a community of people who do these giant competitions, these puzzle hunts, where the best one, the one that I was first roped into, was, would you come play the game? And if everyone wants to go to Wikipedia and look up the game, and the disambiguation is puzzle hunt, you will see descriptions of things that you can't believe exist. There's a movie from the 80s called Midnight Madness, where all these fraternities are on a puzzle quest in cars all night. And that was sort of the basis behind what became the most elaborate puzzle thing you can imagine. You show up at a location in the Bay Area. There are maybe 20 other teams that have rented vans, and you spend an entire weekend solving puzzles, each of which leads you to another location somewhere in the Bay Area.
And is it sort of escape room-esque?
It's more complicated. Escape rooms are like baby versions of the puzzle community. A lot of the people who manufacture puzzles for these like the MIT Mystery Hunt and stuff
now
make escape rooms on the side because they are really good puzzle designers.
Okay. And well, it's, as you can imagine, game designer, everything's a game. I don't know if you know this about being married to a game designer, but everything has a game mechanic and everything. He can't stand in line at a grocery store. So it is, there's some sort of, the UI here is troubled.
I'll give you one of my favorite examples of a moment from the game that I played up in the Bay Area. Is around lunchtime, all the teams were solving a puzzle that then sent them to Chinatown in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And we were looking around Chinatown. We went to the location that seemed to have been indicated by the previous puzzle that we'd solved. And there was nothing there, except we noticed there was one of those vendors selling like DVDs and shit off a blanket.
Yeah.
And then we noticed that he had a pin on his hat that was the symbol of the game competition we were in. So we gave him the answer to our previous puzzle, and he pointed to a stack of DVDs that were some kind of martial arts movie that no one would ever buy.
Right.
And we took that DVD and went to a nearby restaurant because, you know, it's lunchtime. We sat down with our laptop, put the DVD in our laptop, and it was a mashup of a bunch of martial arts movies, but along the bottom of the screen, the subtitles were not in a language that we could recognize. It was, in fact, code. And we spent our lunchtime figuring out how the code related to the dialogue we were hearing, decoded the puzzle over dim sum, and it was the best thing.
Okay. Adam Felber, it's been great having you on the show. Let's have you on tomorrow, and we'll talk about puzzles, because these are amazing.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I would actually love to have you back on the show. So let's tell people, it's Adam Felber. If you Google the words Adam Felber, F-E-L-B-E-R, you will find out where all of his socials are. He's got the new podcast with Andre Debuchet. And is Adam the other
Spiegelman.
Adam?
Spiegelman.
Spiegelman. Is he who I also know him. There's no reason for me to forget his last name. I am a monster, but I'm a friendly monster.
You're friendly monster. For a I feel like you and I have met a few times too, Jackie.
I feel like we have too. And and if you know Lori Kilmartin, we definitely have. So. But Stark Raving Reviews is the new podcast.
It is.
Will that come out? Will that just be where podcasts are?
There's already like two or three episodes out where you get your podcast.
Get it on the ground floor.
Yeah, get it on the ground floor. So, it's really funny. It's unlike a lot of podcasts, like the first couple episodes, tightly written and 15 minutes long.
Oh my gosh. So 15, finite, you guys. This can happen.
Yeah.
Yes. No, nobody listens to Paul Poundstone. He's on that and has been for low these several years.
Yeah.
And she is a freaking genius. I think she's fantastic. Just say that out loud.
Yeah, I think we can.
Wait, don't tell me. A show that I would also like to be on. And then a Barbenheimer, which he didn't write. You should know that.
I did not write Barbenheimer. That.
That's
but we're shooting it at the end of January.
So look for that, you guys. Yeah. And the written word. Look for the Adam Felber written word all wherever you enjoy the written word. And Pogo and Bone and all of these things sound amazing. I could probably go to a bookshelf in my own home and start again.
I know that you can.
Thank you so much for being on the show, by the way.
Oh, thanks for having me. What a whirlwind day this has been for me, discovering your podcast and then being on it in the same day.
Exactly.
I am now Rangers, a Ranger. Yeah? I am now a Ranger, for sure.
Then let me tell you the rules. You know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
It was really fascinating. You did a pop-in in the middle. And there was talk that you wouldn't that we wouldn't do this at all, but then it was kind of so exciting. I wanted to talk to you about the whole thing.
Right, we kind of have to do it, right?
Yeah, Adam Felber have to. It's a podcast. I say we don't have to do anything unless you people send me more money. not this month. Not this month. This month it's send to the food bank month, but next month we're back. Me asking
right. If you
for
send
money.
It to us, we're just going to send it to the food bank. So you might as well just give it to the food bank now.
Right. Cut out the middleman.
That's right.
That'd be us. Adam Felber, writer, a guy that's on Wait, Don't Tell Me. He has a new podcast called Stark Raving Review, where they review movies. He loves a B movie. We didn't talk about that at all. But he's also the co-host on Paula Poundstone's podcast.
Oh,
nobody
okay.
listens to Paula Poundstone.
Right. Or Adam Felber.
Or Adam Felber at that point. but he is so great. He loves Terry Pratchett. And
as many do,
as
you and I do.
I do. It took me like six books to really get into it because I didn't really because it's sort of like Hitchhiker's. So the fact that you're like, no, I get it. It's sarcasm. It's twee. It's
right,
this. It's
right,
that.
Right.
And then like literally the sixth or seventh book. And I get it. Not everyone's willing to do this kind of work if they aren't 12. But
right.
But I started loving him a great deal. But then he loves something you love, which is Pogo.
Oh, yes.
And
I wonder
Bone.
If you can see any of the Pogo.
Oh,
I think it's a little too low. I think it's on the shelf below. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Oh, well. But you love a Pogo.
I do love Pogo.
He's a political satirist. And he said that's what got him into it.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, my dad was bringing back these. I mean, they were considered, I guess they'd be graphic novels at this point, but they weren't called that at the time. They were just books you could buy of Pogo comics
strips
at
from the 50s,
airport
right?
bookstores when I was a kid.
So you were what, eight?
Oh, five, six. And they were all about Nixon and Watergate. And I had no idea what was going on, but I loved them.
Right, because they were anthropomorphized. Is that right? Animals? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and so,
you know, like Nixon was a bulldog, and Spiro Agnew was an eaglet. And
right. Yeah. Right. And there was somebody, and then there was different calligraphy for the different, like some people
so you
were.
You could tell
very...
how people, you could tell what people spoke like.
Yeah.
So they either had like the normal comic book font, or like they were the Vulture who was the Undertaker, and he spoke in his name was Sarcophagus Macabre, and he spoke in this sort of elegant, Gothic,
right,
handwritten font.
Yeah, there was something. He said there was a possum and an alligator that were friends, and they were the normal. They were the everyman.
Pogo Possum and Albert the Alligator.
Okay, and then there was a deacon who spoke.
Deacon Rat.
He was often the bad guy.
That's right, and he spoke in more calligraphied sort of like
yes.
like to get a sense that he was more ecclesiastic.
Right. And he got seduced by the cowbirds, which were communists.
I didn't see any of those, but that's awesome.
Right. It was and he started writing in like 1952, and it was right after McCarthyism, and one of the bad guys was, his name was like Malarkey. And it was just, it just sounded like Senator McCarthy.
Oh,
but
yeah.
His name was something, something Malarkey.
Malarkey.
Yeah. It was, simply J. Malarkey, I think it was. And he was an evil bobcat.
Oh, yeah. I remember the evil bobcat. He had a buddy, a coyote buddy that they were like the bad guys that were running around, although they were sort of good. They were sort of good hearted bad guys.
Right. They just didn't get it.
Right. Everybody was very good hearted in this. Mm-hmm. And
And then the only other thing I wanted to tell you about this show was that Adam Felber's mother wrote Regency romances.
What?
I know. Under the name Edith Layton.
Wait a minute. Have you read any of Edith Layton's work?
I
feel like
her up.
You have. That sounds familiar.
Well, that's because her name is like that country music theory of yours where everybody has some sort of Whitey Magoo name.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't be a country music star unless your last name sounds like it came from the British Isles.
That is also, I think, true, especially in the 80s and 90s. She wrote 90s and 2000s, okay. Early 2000s, I think, was her last, 2006, maybe 2009. But in the 90s, she wrote my favorite publisher or cover, it was Signet, Signet, the Signet romances. Mm-hmm. They were the best researched.
Ooh.
They were often not so sexy, but they were kind of sexy, and they were funny. They were super witty.
Oh, okay.
And I have to go deep into my closet because I'm like your grandmothers, you guys. I have stacks of romance novels in my closet.
It's true.
He nods.
It's true.
We all collect something. That's what I have to say. It's the Dork Forest. But it was a wonderful episode, and I had a really good time doing it. That's all. And then I like to tell you that I love you because you're in the living room, so far away.
Well, I love you also
in the garage,
a very short distance.
And I'll say it again, Rangers. You know the rules out there. Take care.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?